people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to just go all the way to the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fares, another tier, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with Freeways, with People, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice.
Good evening, planet Earth. Welcome to another exciting episode of Los Angeles Nista. And tonight, my in-studio guest is the talented, very prolific, and well-crafted Sound City alumnus, Chris Dye. Chris,
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Well, I'm stoked. You got new tunes for us to play and listen to?
Absolutely.
And we're going to be so stoked to hear you play live in the studio. You're the first live performance via Los Angeles Nista, so this is like landmark.
I love that.
And then later on, we got the owners of the Monrovia restaurant, the Market Grill, and they're going to be bringing tons of food for us to eat and talk about and put pictures on Instagram. And they're all metalheads, so that's pretty cool. They're into
feed
cool
a musician,
music.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's get into it. You know what? We just had James Rhoda last month, the producer of Dave Grohl's Sound City movie, and he had so many interesting stories to share with, like, the whole behind the scenes of the making and all the interviews that didn't make it and all the content that was created. After that, I said, you know what, it'd be nice to pull a few people in that have worked at Sound City and talk about it. I had Robert Morfitt from Econoline Crush. And, you know, you've been there and you've done a lot with your band. And I'd like to hear your experience.
I recorded my first record there with Garth Richardson.
What year was that?
That was 95, I believe. 94, 95. He had just done L7 and Rage Against the Machine. And we had signed an independent deal. And I'd met Garth and really liked his work, especially the Rage record I loved. And so I had a meeting with him, didn't have a manager or anything, just talked to him myself and said, you know, this is the kind of record I want to do. And he was real receptive to it. And he did it for, you know, a lot cheaper than he was doing records for at that time. And one of the studios we started out at was Sound City. And
that's
I didn't
great.
Really know a whole lot about it at the time. I just knew that Nirvana had done the record, and I knew that Fleetwood Mac
Rumors was down there. Right.
And it was an amazing studio. As soon as we got in there, we saw all the records on the wall, and it was my first record. So
when you walked in, was it pretty like instant inspiration?
Absolutely. It was just one of those kind of places that you walk into and you could feel the vibe, you know? I was super excited.
Well, you know what? What room did you actually record in?
In the big room because Garth was all about
the big room.
He had this
sound.
Sort of system of, I'm not so tech with it, but he liked to get the drums in there. He had this PA that he worked with, and he would, mic it all up and get us in there. And it was just a huge, huge drum sound that he would get out of that place.
Now, was all your tracking done in one room, Studio A, or is it like track the drums there and go into a different room? Do you remember?
Primarily, we did it all, all in the big room. We ended up moving over to A&M later, but we stayed in the big room the whole time. You know, I think they were doing some back in those days. They used to cut tape.
Right.
So
no Pro Tools.
Yeah, they didn't have any Pro Tools.
That's an art in itself. Splicing tape and patience.
So they had one of these rooms where they had just tape, you know, sort of plastered on the wall, and they had it all kind of mapped out, and they would just go through and tape all these things together and just make it sound amazing.
So how much time did you spend at Sound City in Van Nuys?
We spent a good couple of weeks there.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was amazing.
So now, at the time, were you guys based in Los Angeles?
We were, and the funny thing is they kind of requested it. It was in the Valley, and they said, listen, you know, we're going to be in the studio late hours, so we want you guys in a hotel around the corner because we want to start early, and we don't want to chase you guys down. So we were actually staying in a hotel down the street.
Very close, like walking distance, actually?
Well, not necessarily walking distance, but excuse me, it was really close. I can't even remember exactly where, but it was close enough that we were there in 5 minutes.
Now, there's a folklore that says that the Budweiser factory would just like spew the the scent of the beer being brewed. But did you smell anything while you were making this record, or is that more of a myth?
I always thought the Valley smelled kind of funny, so I couldn't really tell.
Couldn't tell if it was from the Budweiser factory or some funkiness going on.
Yeah, some funky tranny walking down the street. I don't really remember that as particular, but I was sort of in a crazed state of mind at that point. I was making my first record. I was super excited, so I was you know, just over the top.
That's great. Now, the record that you guys made, what label was that on?
That was on a label called No Name Records.
I remember that label.
Yeah, they at the time we were there, I think it was either us or Florescene. They had signed first. So they had two bands, us and Florescene. And the label ended up eventually going under, but then sort of reformed and went on to sign Slipknot and a bunch of other bands like that. But they had a lot of success with Slipknot.
Oh, gotcha. Now, when did that record come out?
That record, my record? My record came out in 96, I believe.
Right, yeah. And that was actually distributed worldwide.
This was, I want to say, pretty previous to the internet. So, we actually had, a distribution company and all those things that you used to have to have when you made records. We distributed basically nationwide. I'm not really sure about Europe. I'm not really remembering anything about that. I think we were just constant in those days. We were just thinking about, the U.S. We just wanted to, we wanted to get on the radio. We wanted to go out and play, and we wanted to, make the record a success.
Very cool. So, that segues into your chapter now. I mean, you've been there, done that with the band and have toured and have done plenty of groundwork, right. But now you're a solo artist.
Right.
Chris Dine, got a record out.
I don't want to leave the Sound City story before I tell this story, which I never really have many opportunities to tell, but
this is the perfect
Garth,
time.
Garth was famous for trying to stir us up and get us ready in the studio. And this was one night when we were there, and he had brought the Jesus Lizard guys in, and they were listening to the record, and we were all drinking and having a good time and making the record. And he would run in with a fire extinguisher and scare us with it and sort of try and get us to, get off our mark and try and get us to move and get excited. So, it used to freak us out. We'd see him running around with a fire extinguisher and oh my God. So we as the night wore on, me and David Yao got into this drinking contest.
Oh, man.
And I was getting more and more belligerent And so they were in the main studio, listening to some tracks, and I'm running down the hall and I see a fire extinguisher on the wall. So I thought, oh, now it's my turn. So I grab the fire extinguisher off the wall and I run into Studio A and I just let it loose. Well, unbeknownst to me, it was the powdered fire extinguisher and not the CO2 kind.
Oh.
So I rained. It looked like a snowstorm in there. And they, as I did it, I saw them all look to me in horror as it all just sort of settled around the room, all over the board. So Dave Grohl, when you find little white marks in your board, that was me. It was horrible. They almost got me kicked out of the studio.
Let me ask you a question. Did they get pissed off when you did that?
Oh my God.
I mean, that's an expensive knee board.
They were going to kill me. The only thing that saved me was the fact that Garth had been doing it with the other fire extinguishers. So because he had been riling us up already, I kind of got a little bit of a pass. It was as if I was doing something, but I just didn't know that it was the wrong kind of fire extinguisher.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I tried to clean it up and eventually they just dragged me out of there, sent me to the hotel room, and I woke up in the morning and it was in horror. But they cleaned out the channels and did what they could. But I'm telling you, there's some dirt in there that I've put in there. So, there you go, Dave.
There you go.
Enjoy.
Chris Dye approved. Right? Yeah, broke it in with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, I broke
and some
it
good
in.
Rock.
And I made it through. Yeah, we made great records.
And fast forward, you're here present day.
Yeah.
So can it be, it's all positive, right?
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's great.
Well, I'm excited to listen to some of your new tunes. You got a record out.
Right.
We're going to play a few tracks right now. What do you want to play?
Let's play Don't Feed the Animals.
Okay, that's the lead track.
Yeah, first track. Let's go ahead and play that.
Wah, wah, wah.
All right, we're back listening to Chris Dye, our in-studio guest. Chris has a new record out. Chris, we started with the title lead track. Actually, not the title track, the lead track, Don't Feed the Animals.
Right.
And segued into Bob 17.
Right.
Which has a huge backstory.
Right.
And I'm really fascinated by it. And I think it's mandatory you tell the listeners because it explains a lot.
Yeah, well, these are actually advanced tracks from a record that's called Bob 17. And the story behind Bob 17 is, you know, I'd been out in Los Angeles for 20-plus years. I'm from California and been playing in bands and playing music. And things just kind of started spiraling downward with the business. And, you know, I had my bands were broken up and people were tired of playing you know, playing music and being part of the business. It was, you know, things were going on the internet and everything was changing. So it was really hard for me to exist as a musician. I kept trying to, you know, to get bands together and do things, and I was getting really frustrated. And of course, in my frustration, I was reaching for substances and started to get really heavy into drugs and alcohol. And there was an incident where I had been... it's funny, is Skid Row Studios, because that's basically where I had been living for months and months, and I was running around doing drugs, and I'd come down here, and I had OD'd on the streets, and woken up in the hospital, and didn't really know where I was, and I looked on my my wrist, and there was one of those hospital tags, and it said Bob 17.
It actually said Bob 17.
Yeah, it said Bob 17. So I was perplexed by it, but. My instinct was to run. So I called my friends and I said, you got to come get me. I'm in this hospital. You know, I don't know what's happening. I'd been actually gone for 3 days and no one had known where I was. So my friends came and got me. I ran out of the hospital. You know, of course I didn't pay the bill or do anything like that. That was my
that's pretty rock.
Yeah. That was my priority, was like, I got to get out of here.
Even if you have health insurance, just bail.
Yeah. It was bail. It was flight, you know? So I bailed out of there and, went back home, and it was sort of a, you know, it was still a very, it was a life changing event for me. I was like, wow, you know, I had come as close as it ever come to dying and never waking up again. And that sort of just shook me. And so at the time my dad had bought this house in Lockhart, which is just outside of Austin, Texas. And I was just still in a bad way. And he said, listen, you know, I think this is a good opportunity. I don't have anybody to go watch the house. Why don't you just, you know, go out there and watch the house for me and, you know, see if you can handle it, if you like it or whatever, we'll just go from there. So, I drove out there and you know, I'd obviously sold all my gear. I'd lost everything.
Okay.
So I really had no musical gear at all. I just went out there with nothing. And I started to, you know, regroup. And as soon as I started to regroup, I went to the pawn shop and bought my first $80 guitar. I started strumming it on it. And a year later, I was like, you know, starting to feel better. And then, you know, year two, I was like, I think I'm going to stay out here. I liked Austin. And so, this Bob 17 thing kept coming back up. And I turned it into a song. Well, you know, eventually the song became a record. So, I wrote the record, you know, based around my journey from where I was at to, you know, where I am now. And, so I took Bob 17 and wrote all these songs about, you know, my travels. And I also, absorbed a lot of influences from Austin and, from my surroundings.
So you were very immersed in the Texas culture out there.
Yeah, I was completely immersed in it.
We're open to it and let it in and kind of let it resonate.
I loved it. I loved it because people out there have a completely different attitude about playing music.
There's a lot of big hearts out there. People are very friendly.
And there's a lot of roots as far as music goes. And,
right.
And the scene out there is very eclectic. You know, it's not very, you know, the roots are country and outlaw country and all sorts of things, but it's one of the most eclectic scenes I've ever been involved in. And so, I became totally re-inspired.
That's great.
Started playing music again. You know, now I own a few different guitars. Now I own, you know, I sort of have gained my, you know, a lot of things that I'd lost. So I, you know, I wanted to, really what I wanted to do was put Bob 17 behind me. And I felt like the only way I could do that was to write about it. I took some advice from my dad. He said, listen, you know, get it out of you, write about it, and just put it out there, and then you can be done with it. So that's what I did. I said, I want to move on from this. I want to just, you know, start over. And so that's basically what the whole record's about. You know, you can get the songs that you've heard, you can get at Bandcamp. You can download it for free. It's basically just donations, so you can pay what you want for it.
Very
or you can
cool.
download it for free. And I have no problem with you downloading it for free. If you like it, share it with your friends.
Let's talk about the show you got coming up in Los Angeles.
I do.
This Sunday, right?
Oh, and the record will be out in April, by the way.
Is there an actual street date for the hard copies?
No. No, there's no real street date because I'm running my own show, so basically.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, I'm very familiar with all the record stores in the country, so I'm thinking right. You're in Austin, Waterloo's going to have it?
Yeah.
End of Veneer?
They may. I work primarily online.
Okay.
It's a completely self-run situation. You get the music directly from me.
That's awesome.
You know, that's yeah.
You can want the hard copy.
If you want
nothing
a hard
wrong
copy,
with that. That's the way everyone
but
does
I
it.
I feel like a lot of people, you know, download music now. So and sometimes, and I'm into if I'm going to do anything that's kind of antiquated at all, I'll go to vinyl. You know, that's a format that I love
and
that I will go for. CDs I find to be, you know, whatever. I think people can go and download the music and be just as happy about it.
Yeah, I think people are very excited with vinyl copies.
Yeah.
Like they're willing to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
And
I'll do the vinyl. I'm not so excited about making a CD. It doesn't really appeal to me.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. Now, as far as your show coming up, though,
right.
That's the Sunday.
It is. I'm doing a couple of shows for my friend Shelly. It's for Shelly. What is it for? What's the? It's a benefit. For
at the Verdugo Bar.
The Bunny Rescue. So I'm trying to save bunnies.
Well, that's awesome. You know why? Because in 2003, Greg Ginn from SST and Black Flag.
He lives in Texas.
Yeah, I was just out there visiting him, actually, in Taylor.
He's a great guy. I hung out with
him.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
Yeah.
Actually, in 2003, when I worked for SST, he did a Black Flag reunion two nights at the Palladium. And the only reason why he did it was because it was the benefit for cats. It was,
right, he loves cats.
Yeah, when I worked at SST, he had 72 cats.
Right.
And 72, and he would rescue them.
Yeah.
And he had a whole space delegated to them, and he would save them.
Yeah.
And get them to shots and get them adopted. And
yeah.
It was great.
He's a super, super great guy. I've always been a huge fan
of his work.
I love Keith era Black Flag. It's probably my favorite, but I am a huge Black Flag fan. And so anyway, super vegan Easter brunch.
Super vegan Easter brunch.
Yeah, so it's vegan, obviously, because we don't want to, you know, to trip the bunnies out, you know.
Yeah, get them scared,
so,
right?
Yeah, we don't want to be eating their compadres. So, I'm going to be playing at Garfield Place, which is just one block west of Western off of Franklin. It's where I used to live, and Shelly lives there. So I'm going to be playing in the courtyard. And then later on in the evening, we're going to be moving it over to the Verdugo Bar.
Very nice.
And there's all kinds of great
How much is the Verdugo Bar show?
It's all free.
It's all free?
It's all free. It's all donations for the bunnies.
Oh, that's killer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very sweet, actually.
Yeah, well, I think that most of, you know, the times when I really enjoy myself is doing, and I've done this for Shelly for years and years and years. It's always a charitable event. That way when you're trying to get people to come to your shows and you're saying, come, you know, it's this sort of, you know, narcissistic kind of thing. But when it's a charitable event, it's a lot easier to sell. You know, you can tell people, listen, you know, you're coming to help, you know, you're coming to try and do something right. So, it's a great opportunity to play and get people to see you and also help, help in some small way.
Absolutely. I'm excited because later on you're going to play some live tracks for us.
I am.
You're the first out of, you know, out of all the guests we've had off, you know, James Rhoda, some of the Jackass guys. We're going to have you play. You're the first live performance. I'm excited about that.
I love it.
And what we're going to do is we're going to listen to a few more tracks off your record.
I'd love it.
Let's do Burn in the Water.
Okay, let's do that one.
Yeah, Burn in the Water, and we'll come back. This is Los Angeles. All right. Welcome back to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis.
Love it.
And your in-studio guest, our in-studio guest, Chris Dye.
Hello.
He's got a show coming up this Sunday at the Verdugo Bar.
For the bunnies.
You know, Black Flag has the cat rescue benefit, and he has the bunny rescue benefit.
I'm doing about the bunnies. Leave That's that it. Alone, Greg. The bunnies are mine.
He's got the bunny market.
You can have
order.
The cats. Let's try and do a cat and a bunny deal. No, maybe not.
Well, you know what's funny is this show, Los Angeles Nista, you know, in the beginning, we like to talk to our guests about them and with their art and what they're doing and what they're producing and putting out there. The format, actually, we like to like make a right turn at some point on the show and talk about some of your favorite places in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Or whether, you know, where you like to hike or go to galleries. Like when you come to LA.
Let's talk about tacos.
Ooh. What because, are some of your favorite taco places?
It's the thing that I miss, like, just beyond anything when I'm out there. I mean, it's you know, Texas has its tacos, but, I mean, Los Angeles is just, you know, there's just no other place in the world where you can get a taco like that. It's just incredible, you know.
I agree.
There's a place in Atwater I like to go to, Via Corona.
Now, what's your favorite type of taco of all time, or does it matter?
Depend
on the place.
I'll tell you, it depends on the place. There was this place, this truck on Western, just before you got to Santa Monica, that was in like the muffler shop.
Yeah.
It's been there for like 20 years, and we'd always pass it, and we'd always seen big lines out there. And so we said, you know, we're going to check this place out. So we went there, and they had the best tripas tacos. And
tripas.
I've never had anything anywhere else.
Let's explain to people what tripas are.
Yeah, tripas.
Tripas.
Yeah.
That's the guts.
Yeah, it's intestine.
Intestines.
It's intestine. But it ended up being, the way they did it was kind of like
tacos
bacon.
Are great.
They had, you know,
crispy,
they did crispy tripas.
Can't really tell a difference.
If you get the crispy tripas, it's amazing. The soft tripas I can't do. I you know, it's just
That's
really
gooey
it's
and weird.
Gushy, and it's not really what I was after. But anyway, they had a fabulous tripas taco there that I used to go nuts for. But mostly I like the asada tacos.
I
like
classic asada.
I like it, and I like very simple onion, cilantro, and I like a real nice sauce. It doesn't have to be, you know, a red sauce that's great that isn't too chunky. I don't really like,
You don't want the overdone chunkiness.
Yeah, I don't like the bits and stuff like
that. But you don't want it just to be like,
I already got the bits from the onion and the cilantro. So I want the sauce to just sort of be, you know.
Nice background.
Yeah, background. And I like it real nice.
I love it.
You know, I like the, you know, it to kick, you know. I like that kick in there, so.
Have you ever had cabeza?
I have.
Brain tacos.
Yeah. I've tried all kinds of different tacos because it's probably my favorite food. I think it's...
Whether it's fish or chicken or asada,
you know,
it's always
just,
good, right?
We just went to this fish taco place last night called what? Best Fish Tacos.
That was delicious?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was completely amazing.
You know,
these places pop up. You can't do wrong by a taco. It's one of the great, you know, at any time of the day. It's and I love when you know, they're not very big. They're just sort of small, just beyond a silver dollar.
Yeah,
you know.
And if you two, three
bites, maybe
you're good. If you're really hungry, then you just keep eating them.
Yeah, you keep eating.
But you don't have to like overeat.
Yeah,
yeah. What's rad about the taco? I think is it's like it's bulletproof to life, like a cup of coffee and a taco. You can't fuck it up.
Yeah.
If you do, you're an idiot.
Right. You have to be a complete moron. But Los Angeles is just a haven for great tacos. I mean, you can really – there's another place on Santa Monica at this car wash that we used to go to, and it was right around from SIR.
Okay.
And they served some of the – and I remember going to SIR. We used to do shows there. And
like showcases or shows?
Shows. We would do what was called a showcase, but we would end up taking the money, buying 5 kegs in Newcastle and turning it into a blowout. And anyway, they had this. They'd always tell us, "Hey, man, go to the taco truck in the car wash." And we're like, "Really? Okay." And they're still there today, and it's amazing food, you know. And you just, you know, Los Angeles is just, well, the depth of culture here is only so deep because of migration from east to west.
Sure.
We don't have a whole lot of things here in Los Angeles that are, you know, that even they keep around, you know, they usually tear it down and rebuild, mm-hmm. tear it down, rebuild.
That's versus the East Coast, yeah. like these older.
Yeah, older establishments or roots, Europe, yeah. you know. And you actually, you have like that East, that European migration from East to West. And, you know, the West Coast is still fairly new as far as, you know, society is concerned.
You're but absolutely right about that.
One of the deep things we have out here is the taco. The taco runs deep.
That's super
out
deep.
Here. And you can't tear the taco down. And you can't do anything to the taco. The taco's here to stay. So good luck with that. You know
what's cool is I'm going to share a story. This is there's a great, I feel it's great. It's a Mexican restaurant called Oaxacan Rincon on Western between Sunset and Hollywood. And they actually have great, it's on the east side of Western between right. Sunset and Hollywood. And they, during the spring and summer, they have a taco guy outside this sit down restaurant. Mm-hmm. Just making them. And they're like, you're in this nice decor, like, you know, patio, waterfall, holiday lighting,
right.
taco guy. And it was like $2 a taco.
Yeah. And that's another thing about it. The price is just ridiculous, you know? So it's economically sound. You know, it's sound all around. You know, it is inexpensive, it tastes amazing, and you just can't beat the taco.
You know what? That's the PSA.
There's some friends of mine in Austin that have this website called Taco Town, and I love it because I'm such a fan of the taco that, you know, and there's some great places in Austin for tacos, you know. It's just that, you know, once you sort of, you know, get your teeth into a Los Angeles taco, you know, there's just...
It has its own taste.
There is no substitute. I can tell you there is no substitute. You can't get it anywhere in the world. You can't get a taco like you can get here in Los Angeles. And that's a fact.
Yeah, I agree. And I think...
Not even in Mexico you can't get it.
Yeah, LA has its own vibe
it's
happening.
It's its own thing. And completely. It's a beautiful thing.
I'm excited. You're excited. How about
you know
that?
It. I see all kinds of heads bobbing.
Hey, Jeremy, tell us what you think about the tacos
Jeremy
here.
Jeremy loves the taco.
So what's interesting is that, you know, if I have someone come from out of town that's never experienced a true taco truck before.
Sure.
They're like, you're going to fucking buy food off
right.
that thing? And it's like, dude, you don't get it. This shit is amazing.
Yeah, they don't.
Like,
yeah.
At first, it's like this, like, they're kind of like scared to enter that world, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, it's
freaks
like.
Them all out.
Like, can we go
out.
Back to that place again tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the best.
Yeah,
and it's like crack. You know, it's really it's ridiculously good.
It really is. Now, as far as your experience with public transportation in Los Angeles, did you ever ride the Red Line much?
I used to ride it to get drugs all the time.
No way.
Yeah, because I lived.
And back
on,
then, there was probably no police down there.
No,
it was all like desolate.
The Bob 17 was rolling on the Red Line.
That's the Bob 17 artery, right?
Yeah, that was it. The Red Line was my artery. You know, because I lived on Western and Franklin, so we have the station opened up right there on that corner.
Right, Western.
So I would just walk down, get on the train, take it to the row, get my shit, and I'd be right back on the Red Line.
You know what's so rad about this? When I send this podcast link to MTA... They're going to know that. They're like, you know.
Oh, well, I shouldn't have done that.
No, this is real LA culture.
Yeah, it is.
And we're not.
I can tell you.
We're not hiding anything. We're proud of all the truth. We are proud of the truth.
The train system.
So
I think it's so amazing that they did that. I think it is one of the best. It's actually squashing downtown Los Angeles and Hollywood together.
20-minute ride.
Yeah, it starts from one end and the other end, and now they're working, you know, from downtown towards Hollywood and from Hollywood towards downtown.
Well, they're just
doing great things Los Angeles.
It is. And a lot of people don't even realize that we have a subway in place. Some people don't.
Totally great ride. It works for me. In fact, every time I come to Los Angeles, I don't even ask people for a ride because I just take the train.
Where?
I take the bus line to the train station, and I ride it through Compton and all that, you know, the areas, and then I get down to Union Station. And I can take it to anywhere, but I...
Oh, you mean from LAX?
I take it from LAX.
Oh, the Green Line.
I take
line
the train all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, from LAX. So I've never even asked people for rides. I mean, Shelley came and picked me up this time, but...
But I mean, you know, could be done. Plus...
I do it all the time.
Plus, there's the flyaway now from Union Station for $8.
Right.
And, you know, like, so if you were like Hollywood and Western, the old neighborhood...
Right.
You could go Red Line to Union Station.
Right.
And go to the entrance in back of Union Station on Vignes.
I took that out
and then
last
there's
time.
The eight,
I took
$8
the flyaway. That's right.
And you don't have to leave your car.
Last time I was here, I took the
flyaway. No one has to drive you.
Yeah.
And it's just like you're beating
that's
the system.
That's what I do. I don't ask for anybody for rides anymore. I take mass transit, and I think it's fabulous. I mean, it really, you really need it in Los Angeles. Before I left here, I was keeping a bike in the back of my truck because I had to... It was too far to walk from my parking space to my apartment because I had to park like 6-8 blocks away. So I would have to park, pull my bike out of my truck and ride my bike to my apartment and then get up in the morning, ride my bike back to my truck. That's where it got as far as parking and busy and, you know, it just got ridiculous, you know, too far.
Everyone has just been schooled on Los Angeles NISA territory by Chris Dye, everybody. I can't wait to share this podcast.
When it gets to two vehicles, you need to reassess your situation.
Yeah, and you know what? We're going to get into two more tracks off your new record. This is called Killing Butterflies, and we're going to go into a big bend.
Awesome.
the fire. It's a big band.
Welcome to Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, producer, creator, Edward Solis. My in-studio guest, Chris Dye, straight from Austin, a SoCal native, very immersed in Los Angeles. And
I love it.
You know, we just heard tracks off his new record, and we're really excited about it. What I'm excited about now is not only that the taco is bulletproof.
It is.
But this is going to be the very... very, very first live performance on Los Angeles Nista. So Chris is going to go down a list of songs he's going to play for you, where it's going to let him play.
Right.
Until he wants to stop. He's here acoustically. It's going to be vocals and acoustic through two mics. And what you get, what you hear is what you get. And this is Edward Solis signing off. Enjoy Chris Dye. Take it away, Chris. Thank you for being my guest.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
right.
That's a love song for the ladies.
Oh.
You know. So
very nice, very nice.
Should I do some more songs?
Yeah, do a few more.
All right. Let's
you're the first live performance on Los Angeles and stuff. Chris Dye, thank you so much. You know what? We got time for one more.
All
so
right.
Let's hear it.
Let's
hear it.
Do, let's see.
But your ball game, whatever you want.
All right. Something better, go ahead and make your move.
Wow, what a great set. Chris, thank you so much. That's a wrap.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
What a great set. Thank you, everyone.
Eddie Solis.